This is COVID Conversations. I'm Erin Ransford, and I'm here with Dr. Ismail Nabil. Dr. Nabil is the Deputy Medical Director of Employee Health, Safety, and Wellness for the Mount Sinai Health System and an Associate Professor in the Department of Environmental Medicine and Public Health at the Icahn School of Medicine. He's a Fellow of the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine and is the current Vice Chair of ACOM's Council on Scientific Affairs. In this series of recordings, we explore a variety of topics surrounding the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus and the COVID-19 disease. Today is December 31st, 2020. Our primary topic of conversation is the genetic mutations of the SARS-CoV-2 virus and its implication on public health.
Hi, Erin.
Hello.
Good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk with you as well. This is our very last day of 2020, and we're getting one more COVID conversation in. There's new news every single day.
It's been a challenging year for sure for so many.
Yes, it has.
I'm so excited for the scientific community who have banded together and have made something really remarkable. In 10 months, we are able to provide vaccination or prevention against this disease.
That's phenomenal.
Truly remarkable, indeed. The virus is mutating.
I have heard that there is a variant that's making a lot of news in England and that it's made its way to the United States and possibly other countries as well.
Yes, you are absolutely right. So I do want to talk a little bit about it, but first and foremost, I do want to give a little bit of perspective, not only in terms of viruses, but also the practice of occupational medicine. Some of us are trained in another specialty. It's called informatics. And that's the field that actually look at many things related to genes, sequencing, as well as clinical information related to health of a individual or a population. And it's exciting to see that we can use those tools in occupational medicine to really decipher some of the most challenging problems, and especially in the mutating or variant of the virus. So the question I have for you is, do you think that virus mutates?
I think it does what it needs to do to try to survive.
Yes. So more commonly, viruses do change. We call them variant or strain or lineage. And sometimes we use the word mutation or change in the virus. That's very, very common. So it's not unusual to see virus changing. A good example is a flu virus, which change every year. And we try to keep up our vaccination based on the change that has occurred in the virus. The way we basically predict the change is looking at our southern hemisphere and see if the virus has changed, and then appropriately sort of synthesize vaccines that can actually attack that virus and produce immunity against it. So it's not unusual to see SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that causes COVID-19 disease, to change. And the variation occurs very commonly in most viruses. But here's the good part. This particular virus does not change as quickly as the flu virus.
That's good to know.
And one of the things that is really interesting about this virus is if it's not changing that rapidly as flu virus, we can say that generally vaccines that has now been administered will be effective against this virus, even the changing virus or variant strain that we can call it. That's really indeed a good news.
Yes. From what I've read, it won't affect the vaccine, or the vaccine will still be effective against at least some of these early mutations of the virus.
And that allows me to sort of talk about what exactly we're looking at. So viruses are built up of they're simple structures, which actually allows them to change over time. The variant or changing virus that's been reported in England, basically it's more prevalent in the southeast of England, is a variant strain of SARS-CoV-2. They attributed 60% of recent infection in London to this variance within the virus. They start detecting the change as early as November of 2020, and then subsequently it hit the news. And now you see it all over the place. Actually, there are two, as of yesterday, I heard that Colorado and California has reported similar change or mutation in the virus.
Is it a standard practice in England to do the genetic sequencing on strains of virus?
Gene sequencing is a very exciting and really thriving field. And the way earlier during the conversation I mentioned that it has a very closely linked with the field of bioinformatics. So what we do is we actually sequence the gene of the virus and take a look and see if there's a virus that's initially was there, very prevalent, and subsequent infection from the viruses, the virus has changed at all. The COVID-19 Genomic UK Consortium, which actually reported the change, is one of the most active entity that has been leading the charge. 157,000 viruses they have sequenced to date, which is a phenomenal number. And then in terms of US, the CDC reports about 51,000 of the 17 million cases that they have tried to sequence in the US. It's a monumental task. Once the test gets done, we actually really look at the virus genetically and see what kind of structure it has. It's a buildup of amino acids, N or Y, which is aspergine and tyrosine. These are building blocks of any virus. So we want to see if there's a change in their structure from one variant to another.
So it's possible that in the United States, with a large amount of cases that we have, that there's numerous existing mutations that just haven't been recorded yet?
Yeah, absolutely true. So as the virus mutates or change or new variant comes in, we can see that the change occurring. This particular virus, the change that has now been widely reported, is basically called by a number 2020-12/01, which is kind of a fancy way of saying where the change occurred. The more scientific way to describe the change is S, the spike protein, the crown around the virus, basically is where we detected the change. And within the crown or spike protein, there's a position 501, where the aspergine, which is an amino acid that got changed to be replaced by another amino acid, which is tyrosine. In simple words for everybody, to explain this, is this changes are fairly common in the viruses and they occur very spontaneously at times because virus wants to be effective, wants to infect pretty quickly. The change really helps virus goes from one place to another or to effectively bind with the receptors of the cell. So if the change occurs more frequently, why we are so concerned about this particular change? There's some indication that this particular change might cause the virus to be more infectious or it spreads more readily than previous versions of the viruses. And that's a concern for public health. And especially, again, talking about an industry, warehouse, school, an institution, if you see these viruses, this viral strain, which has a very high characteristic of getting transmitted effectively, you will see a very rapid spread among the population, especially I think in a close setting in a warehouse or a car manufacturing plant, the spread could be fairly quick and significant.
But just because a mutation has made the virus more easily transmissible doesn't necessarily mean it's more dangerous.
Correct. So even though the transmission of this virus has been fairly effective and involving multiple people, it can be readily transmitted from one person to another. We don't see a significant change in the disease itself. The COVID-19 disease and the spectrum of the disease remains the same, even though the mutation has occurred. And just to give you a perspective, this is not the only change that we have seen. We have seen other changes in viruses. For example, there's another change or mutation called D614G, which has an ability to spread more quickly in humans as well. The change itself does not mean much, except that if it changes the behavior of the virus, we have a lot to learn about this disease and about this virus.
Seems like we're learning new things every single day.
Yeah, and the other thing that I want to highlight as far as transmission risks are concerned, proper masking, social distancing have really been fairly effective strategies regarding all variants of this virus. We have effectively reduced the transmission risk if we mask and socially distant. And I think that strategy should work regardless of the strain. The most important piece of the puzzle is how we behave, how we interact, might reduce the risk of transmission.
In terms of people that receive the COVID vaccine, will immunity change with these new variants?
So if there is a, just like flu vaccine, if we do see a significant change in the virus that can potentially make the vaccine ineffective, then we can retool the vaccine to make sure that it counteracts this virus. At this point, the indication is that's not the case. The vaccine itself really have a significant number of targets on spike protein that allows it to continue to be effective in large parts of the population. There's another thing that occurs, which is called escape mutations, but there has been no evidence that that mutation has occurred or emerged in this particular virus. So a short answer to that question is vaccine continues to be important and effective, a need to be part of the strategy to reduce the risk of acquisition of this infection. It has shown to be fairly effective, and when it's available for general public use, I highly encourage individuals to get vaccinated.
Absolutely.
One other thing I wanted to talk about, and that's related to public health, and especially for occupational medicine practice, the pandemic has given us a very different look at how we do disease surveillance. What we're talking about is a genomic surveillance, a surveillance of a viral strain that's changing, which is very exciting in many ways. We need to understand that this particular way of surveillance for infectious disease is not widespread or commonly used. And that is a future. There has been some significant efforts from CDC to set up or launch a national SARS-CoV-2 strain surveillance program, which came into effect in November of 2020 and will be fully implemented by January of 2021. What CDC is recommending, that each state send at least 10 samples biweekly for sequencing and further characterization, which is a fascinating part of active surveillance. I don't think that we had that tool before. And since the pandemic, the need for such a tool where genomic sequencing can guide the way of how to track and eliminate the disease, and will really help public health officials as well as occupational medicine specialists to really track down this virus and other viruses that mutates or change, and we can have effective public health strategies to mitigate the risk of exposure and minimize transmission of this particular virus.
Yeah, once that infrastructure is in place, I'm sure it'll make it easier for the states to work with the federal government to track these.
Of course. And right now, there has been the coalition of labs, which also includes academia and industry. About 160 institutions have signed up to sort of sequence and pool this information about this virus. And the program itself is called SPHERES, which is a coalition of academics, industry, non-governmental organization, and public health agencies, where we will see a significant increase in a full genomic sequence of the virus, and that will provide an exceptionally rich way to tackle this particular disease, a whole different perspective in terms of public health measures that we can take. For example, if an occupational medicine physician identify an outbreak and can sequence the virus as well, as the cost of sequencing continues to decrease, we can have a much better informed public health intervention in these cases, which I'm really excited about. And I think that really opens up a whole new domain for occupational health.
So it's basically like making the virus an open source software.
Yeah, best way to put it, yes. So if we started to see changes in the software or this particular virus, we can actually inform public health officials about this particular change in this particular segment, be it in the hospital or in a warehouse setting or in a industry setting. Occupational medicine providers who have a breadth of information about public health can really take this tool and can really help minimize the spread of infection, not only for SARS-CoV-2, but for other viruses that mutates and requires full-length gene sequencing.
It sounds like leaps and bounds advancement in terms of public health.
It's a phenomenal area that continues to expand. And I want to call upon the other newer occupational medicine physicians who are looking at this field more closely. I think there's a way we can incorporate this in our disease surveillance process as well as in public health measures.
How will the SPHERES consortium work with international similar agencies?
So it's an open consortium, and it's been led by the CDC Advanced Molecular Detection Program. The CDC has been investing in this for some time. And a consortium is basically a collection of expertise around the globe with a very simple objective of doing sequencing, improving bioinformatic capabilities, and sort of ultimately inform public health decision-making. There are federal labs, state labs, academic institution, corporation, and nonprofit research labs are part of this consortium, including the international collaboration that exists between the U.S. and Canada, as well as in England. So I think what we learned from our international partners, we can also implement this more widely in the U.S. In the ACOM platform, we have a presence from international occupational health collaboration on those fronts with these newer technologies or newer arsenal. We can really make public health surveillance program much more effective.
It's great news.
Oh, exciting. Truly exciting. Yes.
So it sounds like we should continue to be aware of the new variants and mutations of the virus that come out, but hopefully the public can feel a little bit more at ease knowing that the current messenger RNA vaccines are still thought to protect us from those.
Please do encourage yourself as well as others to get the vaccines. The best protection we have against the disease and against this pandemic is to vaccinate as many people as possible. It also creates a barrier for viruses to spread from one person to another. So I think we can encourage employers, employees, the people we work with in different multiple settings. Our message need to be grounded and clear in terms of the effectiveness of vaccine and how it can prevent the disease or it can minimize the acquisition of infection. Providers can play a significant role. We are considered most trusted entities that patients, employees, employer alike listens to us and will follow our lead if we ourselves get vaccinated.
Yeah, it's been wonderful seeing the photos of the healthcare workers getting their first shot of the vaccine and spreading the good news and sharing positivity and factual information about vaccine.
Absolutely essential. We all are in this together. And I hope that New Year brings this pandemic to an end. But we all have to do our part to make this work. Happy New Year, Aaron.
A happy New Year to you.
Thank you.